Hey, thank you for tuning in, folks. The Charlie Kirk assassination has become all-encompassing. There's just so many different theories out there now. I've been watching them all day long. My mind is going to explode from Luke, Tim Pool, Alex Jones, Candace, Larry, our friend Larry, the geopolitical military analyst. I just watched him on Dan Davies, where they showed pictures frame by frame of, as it was about to happen, how his shirt went up as if he's been hit here, and then exit wound didn't come in the side of the neck. You're Candace, the tip of the spear, talking about what we discussed when it first happened, how Charlie Kirk had a change of heart about certain geopolitical things, presenting a lot of evidence. Very, very moving, the early videos, of watching Charlie Kirk dancing to power, proudly wearing his Kanye West sneakers and asking Candace if he looks cool, things like that. But anyway, we have got Professor Hamamoto on, who's going to give us his take, which is just going to blow my mind even more, I imagine, and yours as well. So huge thank you for coming on, my friend.
Mr. Atwood, thank you so much for your kind invitation to visit with your wonderful audience, the global international audience. And I'm going to try to unpack for the global audience, the British audience, for those of you who are not familiar, for example, with the state of Utah within the United States and some of the more metropolitan trouble areas where we're used to all this sort of violent activity. Here we are in middle America, Utah, but as it turns out, it's not really far off from the Antifa track because the state of Utah has been infiltrated by the very same forces from the top down. From the governor, see, what is his name? Spencer Cox. First time, I didn't know who he was. By the way, there's some talk that part of this is to position him as a running mate for JD Vance, another crypto globalist. Right, so he's getting some airtime there. But the first time, Mr. Atwood, that I sit on my eyes on him, I said, "My," because he was hogging all the spotlight, right, when this investigation was going on. And I said, "This guy's gay." Now, it's not the fact that he's gay that registers with me. What it tells me is that, oh, okay, he is part of the agenda. How do I tell this? From his vocal affect, his turns of his speech patterns, let's just call it that. Just like you hear a certain group of people who use vocal fry, right? It marks them off. It's a shibboleth, like in the Old Testament. So that's their coded term saying, "Hey man, I'm one of you." And he doesn't have to be closeted about it. So what is the empirical evidence to show that he is one, this guy Cox is one of them, the globalists, the Soros tribe. And I'm just using Soros to encompass a whole constellation of people with interests that are contrary to those of the United States of America and to all sovereign nations around the world. Globalists, in other words. How do I know this? Well, he's the guy that's a governor of the state who's most aggressively been imposing what is now called diversity, equality, inclusion through the whole state government, its education institutions, public institutions, and any taxpayer-supported institutions. And this includes law enforcement, the fire department. We've seen the same pattern in California because we have our governor, the closeted Gavin Newsom. Right. So they're cut out of the same cloth. They have the same handlers. And I think this is an important point of entry. And I have some other pieces of information that need to be really put on the table here. This needs to be put on the table because a lot of people, even within the United States of America, who have vacationed in the beautiful natural splendor of Idaho with its running streams and its old forests and its rolling mountains. Did you ever get to go to Utah when you were living? Because you were living in the rough region, the Mountain West, right?
I never made it to Utah. The closest I got to Utah is watching American Primeval, where they've got the leader, the evil leader. Have you watched it?
Well, no, I haven't, but it has that mythos. Yeah, I mean, these are like mountain men, right? They're men of nature. And by the way, part of this is true because there is a lot of quote unquote retired special forces types, Delta Force type people who live in the area. So they have a pool of individuals to draw from who are mercenaries. They're equivalent to, if you're in Britain, to SAS. In fact, that's who they pattern their whole organizational system and their philosophy after SAS, British SAS. And you also have a lot of retired cops, a lot of retired sheriffs from places like San Francisco, Los Angeles. So you have all these cosmopolitan globalist influences in this little idyllic, pristine state with moose running around and trout jumping out of the streams and people canoeing peaceably down the river and camping, right? But it's in truth a globalist outpost. So if they can succeed in capturing the state of Utah, that'll be their foothold for the great Middle American heartland that they want to take down. They need to take that. They, meaning the globalists, need to take down as part of the larger process of the one world government, the new world order, as it's been called. Because, you know, New York City, San Francisco, Oakland, Los Angeles, Chicago, that's easy pickings, right? There's lots of minorities there. There's a lot of disgruntled, highly educated, disaffected intellectuals who may not be paying attention, but they're just for revolution in general. They're into discord, if I can borrow the trademark of one of the communications platforms that were used by these game heads, these 20-something game heads, which have now, we're seeing, they have been successfully incorporated into this techno-anarchist system of takedown, right? There's so much here that's instructive to us. And if we look at it closely and beyond the megaphone, right? I call them the pop-up pundits and the so-called forensics experts, all the ex-cops who show us, oh, you can't do that with a bolt-action rifle. Oh, that's the wrong caliber. You know, that's important, but it's really a distraction. And worst of all, by the way, are these female, and I hate to sound sexist, but they're all women because they're in love with killers, because killers are the only ones with balls left in human civilization anymore. They love con men. They love crooks. They love Kanye West. They love P. Diddy, because at least they're not castrated the big ballas, but they're big fans of people like Luigi Mangione. And I'm sure this guy, even though he's identifies as trans, is going to have a whole trans hybristophilic group of worshipers, right? So distrust people. I'll name them. Catherine Ramsland. She was the professor that recommended Brian C. Koberger for the doctoral program at Washington State University so he can become a serial killer professor. How's that? That's like right up a, that could be Scream 6. Yeah, are you familiar with the Scream series? Scream? The franchise directed by Wes Craven. By the way, I'll be, you want to subscribe to my channel because I'll be doing a full workup on the Scream generation. The generational trauma of the slasher, stab, bloodletting, gore movies that I think probably influenced a lot of these campus killers.
Didn't Ted Bundy have an affinity for Utah?
He did. He comes from that zone in the Pacific Northwest or the Intermountain West, which is known for its serial killers. And speaking of Ted Bundy, who did he target? He targeted students at colleges and universities. Where did this latest massacre take place? This assassination, UVU. Purposely, these are not accidental sites, right? So if people have been following my channel for the past 5 years and my career in general, you would know that I lived in the belly of the beast. I worked there. I saw this whole process evolve over at least now over a decade, and I've been talking about it. And I've seen the transgender movement become increasingly militant and now violent. And in fact, not too long ago on the Professor Hamamoto channel, I did a whole talk called, guess what? Violent Transgenderism. And then shortly, just a couple weeks ago, I said, do not fall for the tranny psyop, right? I'm just seeing where it's pointing, the direction it's heading. Because if you can read the society, the culture, the politics correctly, including the all-important popular culture, like the gamehead culture, the drug culture, sports culture, then you can predict where it's going next. So we have the takeover by the globalists of the state of Utah. It's not a pristine place of retreat where people go to escape big city pestilence and high crime and violence. You're walking right into the middle of it, the staging area for the takeover. All right, number one. Secondly, very important, and your previous guest of just a couple of days ago, Kevin Annette, who's been on your show multiple times, put his finger directly on an institution that has been neglected in all this discussion. All the focus seems to be on Israel and Masi and the Benjamin Netanyahu, right? See, I like to give it like an authentic accent, at least my approximation of it. But they don't talk about the Church of the Latter-day Saints, LDS for short, or as we know it popularly as the Mormon Church. Now, the alleged shooter himself, and notice I say alleged, even though he's confessed, right? Timothy McVeigh confessed to the Oklahoma City bombings, but did he really do it? Maybe not, right? Tyler Robinson is from an LDS family, Latter-day Saints. Yes. I don't think this has been adequately addressed. In fact, the whole state of Utah was captured by the LDS a long time ago. State of Utah is on the state flag. It's what? It's a beehive. It stands for industry, cohesiveness, productivity, wealth. It's called the Beehive State. It's right on the flag. Now, for those of you who are interested in all the arcane types of information and knowledge, you'll say, hey, isn't that part of the iconology of Freemasonry? And you would be correct. It certainly is. Because Brigham Young comes out of Freemasonry. Right? And as your guest, Kevin Annette, pointed out, these institutions aren't simple stovepipes. They're connected to other networks of power. They're competing with them in some cases, but more often than not, they're cooperating with them, right? So he mentioned specifically the Catholic Church being involved with LDS, right? And there's also secular institutions. This is why the LDS connection is so important. There's a lot of secular law enforcement institutions that are embedded within or implicated with the LDS, namely Cash Patel's organization, the Federal Bureau of Investigation, FBI, going back to the days of J. Edgar Hoover, actively recruited people from the LDS. He trusted them. Is that Joseph Smith?
No, that's Brigham.
Oh, Brigham Young. Okay. By the way, yeah. The whole spy system, from what I read, was put in place so that they can monitor themselves and the larger community for informants, because they were committing a crime with bigamy, plural marriages. Right. Eventually, the church itself changed their policy, but they had multiple wives. They had group marriages. So they put this system in place in order to make sure that people weren't ratting them out, dissenting, spying, and informing on them, and also to warn them of hostile municipal, federal, you know, governmental or local, that's Brigham Young there, people
Smith.
Who were going to be, oh, Joseph Smith, right? Well, he was a Freemason too, wasn't he? Yeah, okay.
I think so.
So the spy system was set up in order for their own self-survival. And later on, it became autonomous. And the point I'm making here is that system never went away. It's more refined than ever. And I wouldn't be surprised if that spy system is integrally related to what went down in Orem, Utah on September 10th, 2025.
Joseph Smith was initiated into the Nauvoo Masonic Lodge in March 1842 and later incorporated elements and symbols from Masonic rituals into the Latter-day Saint Endowment, which he inaugurated in May 1942. This association was common for the time and place, as Freemasonry was a popular social and fraternal organization. And many members of the church also joined the Nauvoo Lodge.
Yes, this is not conspiracy theory. It's part of the history. It's the history that's been sort of pushed into the background as the Church of Latter-day Saints itself wanted to obscure its unseemly connections to these institutions. But for those of us who have historical memory and documents and books and pamphlets, such as this one here, which I can recommend, we can find out all the details of this history. This one is called Mormon Spies and Hughes, as in Howard Hughes, because he was done in by the quote-unquote Mormon Mafia. So this is called Mormon Spies, Hughes, and the CIA by a husband and wife team, Gerald and Sandra Tanner. I looked it up for your viewers. They have some interviews, or at least Sandra Tanner has some interviews on YouTube if you want to check it out. However, this book, this pamphlet, which is chock full of information, it was published by their own book. They had a mom and pop bookstore attached to their house in Salt Lake City, which is the capital of LDS activity. And I've been there. I visited the tabernacle. But this was published way back in 1976. But since that time, the Mormon Church has been very successful in rewriting its own history and mainstreaming itself, I guess this is the best way to put it. Now, there's a lot of information. By the way, this book is no longer available on jeffbezos.com. So whenever I hold these books up, go over there and snatch it, because it might disappear. I see now it's selling used for $50. It's a thin little, it's all Xeroxed and stapled together, right? This is the type of information you need, because the other books are as good as they are. They're published by globalist entities that are rewriting the history as we're reading it. And another collector's item is this one called Organized Crime Behind Nixon. And it goes into all what we know about the mafia, Florida, New York, to California and Chicago. We know that part. But omitted here, I don't think the editor knew about it, was the pivotal role of the Mormon Mafia in the Richard Nixon administration and takedown. So all the information is here. This is published in 75 by a character who deserves a biography in his own right. His name's Art Kunkin. He founded and edited the famed Los Angeles Free Press in the 60s. There were all these underground papers. I think in London had a flowering of underground newspapers that covered music, culture, politics, especially radical politics. Barry Miles, the great author, the British author, I don't know if you're familiar with him. He's written about Pink Floyd, the London music scene, the Beatles. You know, he ran the Indica bookstore. He was one of the co-founders, I believe. He had an underground press, an underground publisher, and that's like Art Kunkin. And these later were put out of business by intelligence agencies, or they were bought out by corporations. So what we see now is indie press has already been brought into the fold, just like a lot of these people who are showing up on YouTube, especially the younger generation of spokespersons for conservatism, are controlled. And I hate to tell you this, not you specifically, Mr. Atwood, but some of the people who are mourning his loss, as I do, is that would include Charlie Kirk.
They said he took big time money from BB, and they wanted him to say certain things and be a Judeo-Christian.
Yes. He put in the Judeo part of the Christian, even though theologically that's questionable. Anyway, that's another discussion. Yeah, he was receiving AIPAC money. He was going off the kibbutz. Or we say it in America, he was trying to get off the reservation. You know, like the Indian reservation or the plantation. But since we're talking about Israel, I say he was trying to leave the kibbutz. Get it? No, but the point is that I think there were forces that said, no, you have to obey the party line. And if you don't, let us show you a strip of film by one of our assets. His name is Abraham Zapruder. He's the guy we had positioned right there to make sure that people can talk about the dancing Israelis in the future. So, and Charlie Kirk was smart enough to know what he was being told. So if you remember the pivotal scene in Godfather 1, the original Godfather, right, where Don Corleone is saying, we're going to give you an offer or give him an offer he can't refuse. Charlie Kirk was given an offer he can't refuse. He refused it. But he didn't wake up with a severed horse head in his bed. His own head was nearly taken off himself in front of thousands of people, millions now, seeing it on video. So
let's just answer Susan. Susan is confused. She's, are we saying he was beginning to sell out? Susan, the impression I get of Charlie Kirk from looking at the videos that Candace has posted, he was a naive, innocent, ambitious young man in his 20s. And he, you know, was indoctrinated and incorporated certain value system. And then over time, during that process, he also took a lot of money from people who believed they could use him, let's say. But then over time, because Candace, you know, woke up a lot earlier, he was coming around as well. And the people who'd given him money were starting to pull the money because he wasn't complying with the requirements to have the money. He'd done a deal with the devil, basically. So he wasn't selling out. He'd awakened, let's say. is that an accurate?
Yeah, I agree wholeheartedly with that characterization. There was a whole generation of, I call them the young punks, because I mean, I'm being real here. I thought Charlie Kirk, when he first came out, was a punk. He was a really smart mouth, fast-talking punk. So was Tucker Carlson. I remember when he used to wear a little bow tie. So this guy's a punk. Where did he come from? How the hell does he get off spouting this and that and the other? But there was a whole generation of young punks, American punks, It was start. It was inspired, but the proof of concept was when Milo Yiannopoulos was imported to America and went around from campus to campus rabble rousing, and then there were some coins that dropped in these planners' heads. Hey, we can do that. We can create our own Milo Yiannopoulos. So they put him off of the stage, right? We haven't heard from him since. So they brought forward Charlie Kirk, Nick Fuentes, who's still a punk, I think, and Candace Owens, who's also a punk, and Tim Pool, who's a punk in a beanie. I call him Beanie Man. He's a punk. Ben Shapiro's a punk. They're all punks. All right. Now, do they share similar values to mine? Concern? Yes, they are. But they're controlled, right? And to the extent that they toe the party line, they're going to be allowed to spout out whatever they say. But I agree with you that Charlie Kirk was beginning to follow his own conscience. He had been to Gaza many times. He had seen with his own eyes the atrocities that were going on there. And he had, I believe, fundamentally altered his view of his juvenile, his salad days, when he was an ambitious college dropout who with a glib tongue, with charisma, who can command an audience. That's where he was heading. And he, you know, he was aspiring to political office, I'm sure, at some point.
He got close enough to the devil to smell his breath. The breath didn't smell so good.
When you sit with the devil, be sure to use a long spoon. That's an old saying, right? If you sup with the devil, make sure you use a long spoon. Now, you mentioned one of the persons who's mentioned in conjunction with Charlie Kirk's ideological shift to sanity and humanity, right? His departure from what his handlers wanted to hear, right? In other words, is a character named Max Blumenthal, the editor, the founder of the so-called Gray Zone. Let me just briefly mention the fact that this guy's a leftist. Not only that, his father, Sid Blumenthal, is a leftist. He's so left that he was part of the Clinton Foundation milieu. So you have to ask yourself, who the hell is Max Blumenthal? You're thinking, oh, he's a Jew, so, you know, there are Jewish Americans who are not going along with Bibi Netanyahu, who's actually American, by the way. He has Israeli citizenship, but he comes from America. He's an agent. So Max Blumenthal is the one that's credited with changing the mind of Charlie Kirk, or documenting the shift, saying that, hey, I might be killed because I'm beginning to depart from the script. So that's Max Blumenthal. But Max Blumenthal comes from a family of political operatives and handlers. So you see, they're controlling it from the left, from the right, you name it. Check out, not Max, he's in his own right, he's had a journalism career. He's like pushing 50, 47 years old or something. But his father, Sidney Blumenthal, is a very, very important character in the Clinton milieu, right? He's an operative. Almost as important as John Podesta, right? So you have to wonder, are we being played here, whipsawed? Are they controlling the opposition to it as well, right? This is a very, very subtle operation, a very subtle psychological operation going on here on multiple levels. Anyway, those are the main comments I had. One is the takeover of the state of Utah, top down from the governor down, all the way down. We know about the universities and schools, and they were taken over a long time ago. And then the second is the LDS connection. Now, the third one, the third level, and it might be up there, it intersects with the two major points that Aaron made, is that that whole area, as pristine as it looks, it's like it's the earth as God created it, right? You know, the trees and the screams and the bears and the trout and all you know, nature. But that's also a huge center for Satanism, that whole area. Yeah, not just Utah, but parts of Idaho, Western Washington. And this is not me saying this. This is the Provo, and Provo is in Utah. It's a major city in Utah. Provo Daily Herald ran articles in 1985 about what one of the headlines was, Satan worship in Zion, because they view this as their promised land, right? The Mormons did. And they had a series of articles that went into it very, very deeply. So this is a thread that all you independent researchers out there could benefit by following up on. And I'm right there with you. I'll be looking into it, because a lot of that is involved with similar types of crimes, sensational crimes. A lot of them ritualistically also enacted on college and university campuses, like the University of Idaho, with Brian C. Koberger, who was the grad student 10 minutes away in the opposite state, the adjacent state, Washington State University, studying criminology and criminal justice at the doctoral level. And he killed what? It was like something out of the Scream movies. He killed four young people, stabbed them to death. We're still coming reeling from the seeming conclusion of that case. And now this event happens. It's like the Scream franchise, the Wes Craven Scream franchise. These atrocities are appearing with regularity. Scream 1, Scream 2, Scream 3, Vampire Diaries Season 1, Vampire Diaries Season 2. By the way, I mentioned those intentionally because there's the same character who's involved with scripting that, literally. All these dramas, his name's Kevin Williamson. And guess what? Like the governor of Utah, he's also GLBTQ. Kevin Williamson, he gets these awards from this organization in America called GLAAD, Gay Lesbian Association. Their whole deal is to enhance and to plug gaydom and lesbianism and now transgenderism on film, television, and now indie media. That's GLAAD, all caps. Check it out. Look them up. He's won awards there, and he proudly waves his rainbow flag in the face of America while he puts these films and these series, these dramatic series, promoting vampirism, Satanism, and human sacrifice. The whole Moloch menu, Kevin Williamson. I'll be giving a full workup on him on the Professor Hamamoto channel. So please subscribe. It's a very important work that I'm trying to put across here. And now I think I have the perspective. Unfortunately, I had to watch all the, and I haven't finished it. I'm watching all the Scream sequels. Stars David Arquette, Courtney Cox. Remember Friends? The sitcom Friends?
What's a dribble? With, yes.
Jennifer Aniston. On all those, she was one of the friends. And then she took a different turn. And I'll be going through the Vampire Diaries. Excuse me, because I'm seeing these films and these series is helping to condition the generation, a traumatized generation of young people who reportedly on the campus of UVU cheering the fact that Charlie Kirk had been murdered right in front of them, according to eyewitnesses.
All right, we've got 2,000 watching live right now, so please subscribe to the professor's YouTube channel. He's got over 61,000 subs right now. I put the link in the live chat. The link is in the description box as well. His Facebook link is in there as well if you want to reach out. And, you know, you've given excellent macro picture of the vested interests and the influences upon campus. But we've had some questions come in on the micro level. For example, zooming in on the relationship between Tyler and his trans roommate. Have you looked at any of the messages between them? Have you drawn any conclusions about any of that?
I did, and it looks like something that was written by 40-year-old hairy-backed heterosexual FBI agents to each other to simulate the dialogue of 22-year-old trans people. I don't see that type of dialogue going on. If you've interacted with Gen Z type people, they don't communicate like that. They just like stare at each other. Or they'll stare at you, especially if you're a geezer like me. You know, you go up to a store to them or a coffee shop and they don't say anything. Maybe they communicate just on DM. So I think that it sounds very suspicious to me.
There's a Breaking Bad-esque theory, like Walter White laid things out in a way that would make Jesse look innocent, that these messages had been written in a way to make the roommate look innocent. Do you think there's anything to that?
That could be, but the timeline wouldn't match unless they went back and electronically altered it. It looks like he was out of the picture. They were lovers. They shared some intimacies, apparently. But I don't think he, you know, from what I could tell, he, whoever he was part of the planning. But beyond that pair, I think there were other individuals involved with the overall conspiracy. And that will be...
There are reports of a lot of cars visiting the property in the weeks running up to this. That's from the family, because the property was owned by the family. And these cars were causing problems on the street. They were having a lot of visitors.
Uh-huh. And I also read one report where rather than running into the woods, which is not actually woods, where he was supposedly hiding the rifle. And some people say that rifle was put there. It was already there. He didn't leave it there. He was sighted being picked up by an automobile and driven away from the site after he left the building, the Losi building. By the way, Losi, the family, L-O-S-E-E. On a hunch, I looked up who Losi was, the namesake for the building and other buildings on the UVU campus. Guess what? He was LDS. He was an LDS elder. So the LDS fingerprints are all over the place.
You got quite a few people asking about his wife's speech.
Wow. She's pretty articulate for someone in the midst of such a incredible tragedy. You know, I hate this I don't mean this disrespectfully, but I wonder if that was her. You know, we've heard of crisis actors, right? We are familiar with the concept, but they're also post-crisis actors. And she's, from what I was told, had body doubles, which makes sense if you're a public figure and people are death threatening you all the time. Charlie Kirk had body doubles. So most people would not be able to stand up there after their husband had been shot and deliver such a articulate, passionate message. You know, that's just an opinion, though.
What's your take at on the FBI director? Why is he so bizarre? Why did they say Valhalla at the end of the media meeting?
Good questions. I think he's a gamehead, like all the young men of his generation. They have grew up watching third-person, single-shooter, role-playing, fantasy, live-action role-play. Well, he's of that generation. I'm sure he played hundreds and hundreds of hours when he was going to college. But there's another reason why his expression looks kind of off. I understand he has a glass eye. he has an artificial eye or some kind of eye injury that makes it not register as being real, or he looks startled or dumbstruck, let's say. So far as his ability is concerned, I think this harkens back to my early observation. So far as his own, we're talking about Cash Patel, about his own managerial abilities concerned, I think he has a really tough row to hoe because he's working amongst people in the FBI. About a third of them, maybe up to a third, are, guess what? They're LDS, like I mentioned. So they're going to be loyal to Utah, to Brigham Young, to Joseph Smith, to the Beehive State, to their church. Not to the United States of America that they've been sworn to protect. So he's got that to deal with. And the same with the Central Intelligence Agency. They're also heavily dominated by LDS people. I don't know about the Military High Command, Joint Chiefs of Staff, Delta Force, where their training, their religious background is. I don't know where that falls, but that's definitely something that needs to be investigated.
So with this next question then, I'll read it in a minute, but I just want to say something before. Before I came on the stream, I was watching Larry Johnson, who's a geopolitical analyst, military analyst, on Dan Davies' channel. Great guy. We've had him on this channel before. And he was saying that Tyler has got a family member who's fighting in Ukraine and that Charlie Kirk was on the hit list, Ukraine's hit list. And, you know, all we're discussing here are the vested interests. We don't know who's done this. We're just discussing the vested interests and mulling over the possibilities. But the question is, why did they want Charlie Kirk out of the way? Why was he so much of a threat?
Well, first of all, I've heard chatter that there are Ukrainian state-sponsored assassins within the U.S., right, ready to be mobilized. And from what I understand, some of these special forces people like Delta, they cross-train with foreign governments like Ukrainians in places like Idaho, in Utah, some of these remote areas. So I don't rule out that possibility. Now, so far as the second part is concerned, why Charlie Kirk would be seen as a enemy of Ukraine is that I think he was moving in the direction of extracting the United States as his idol Donald Trump was saying, extract them from the forever wars system. Not isolationism, but extract the U.S. from these ruinous foreign wars, foreign entanglements. That's where, and of course, the Ukraine leadership is not going to like that because they'll lose billions of dollars right into their pockets, which they'll probably reinvest in Utah real estate, which, by the way, is being confiscated by the U.S. government, by the federal government, under the guise of protecting vital strategic food, agriculture resources from guess who? The Chadcoms. And the governor of Utah is saying, we have to protect our national security from the Chinese. And so they're going to hand it over to the feds. But the thing is, the people, we're going to say, oh, great, the Chinese are our enemy because Alex Jones tells us that the Chadcoms are the enemy. So we're going to believe him. But they don't tell you the other part. You're not going to get none of that property. It's going into the feds, and it's going to be sold out to these dictators from Ukraine or Venezuela, whoever else. And I mentioned the Chinese. I'm sorry.
We've had a lot of military experts and stuff on talking about the war in Ukraine. And after speaking to all them, my conclusion was that the war in Ukraine is a multi-billion dollar scam, that putting money into the hands of the globalists at the taxpayers' expense. And it could have ended a couple of years ago with the peace deal that Boris Johnson scuppered. But the globalists sent him out there, the little lapdog, and told him to keep going. And tragically, over a million young people primarily dead now in the Ukrainian meat grinder, thanks to Boris and the globalists. And it's like they just want to keep this war going so they can squeeze every last penny out of it until there's no more Ukrainians left to fight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Now, if I can finish my comment about the supposed Chinese threat today, right? Utah has historically, in the Mormon Church in particular, has been extremely hostile to Chinese people beginning in the middle of the 19th century, 1850s, during the gold rush. And also opium, the connection.
Opium, exactly.
It's like a limehouse. Yes. These wretched opium dens of are being shanghaied, right? So that's being replayed again. But the thing is, the National Guard, the vigilantes, the Mormon Church, the militias in the territory of Utah, Idaho, and Western Washington, they slaughtered thousands of Chinese laborers, thousands of them. Many of them are in unmarked graves. So if you want to talk about human Holocaust, that's one that should be mentioned when we're talking about all the bloodletting that's going on in Utah. Right? There's these massacres that occurred, huge population. It's like Gaza in Utah. That's why there's no Asians up there. The state is 70% white. There's less than 2% yellow people up there. There's less than 1% black people in Utah. They were all sent away. And of course, the natives are put on the reservation and started up. And Kevin Annette has given the whole historical background of what they did to them. Right. So that's the real history of Utah. This leftist character, the gay leftist governor there, Cox, he's not talking about that part of the history. He's saying, oh, we're going to make America with open, because he's an open borders character. He wants the endless wars. I'm sure he gets funding from Soros et al. And all the other people. Right. But John Chinaman has paid his dues up in the state of Utah. And that's in the history books for sure. By the way, there was many people know, at least in America, they were taught in school, there was the eastern part of the Transcontinental Railroad that connected with the western part of the railroad, and the meeting point was Promontory Point, Utah, and they drove the Golden Spike to connect the eastern part of the American Empire with the western part, right? It's on the movies. It's in the history. We learned that, but what you don't know is that the Chinese people built that son of a gun. They built that railroad with a lot of Irish immigrants, by the way, Irish laborers, Welsh, but mostly Chinese. And in the official picture of the driving of the Golden Spike in Promontory Point, Utah, there was not a single Chinaman included. We was written out of history. We weren't included in for the first place.
So Mr. Atwood, I just want to see a dramatization.
Pardon me?
I just want to see a dramatization of how ruthless the Mormons were in the 1800s. Watch American Primeval, folks. They are wicked, wicked. So Ashley, Professor, is wondering your thoughts on the old man they originally snatched as a suspect who ended up having inappropriate images of kids on his phone.
Yes, his name is Zinn, I believe. George Hodson Zinn, age 71. He was the diversion. As it turns out, they found this out pretty quickly. Independent researchers found out that he has been at all these signal events in state-sponsored terrorism. Somehow he's kind of like the Zelig, you know, the movie, Woody Allen movie. Or he's like the Forrest Gump of false flag events, isn't he? George Hodson's in. And I think the perfect photo that emerged from this to capture who he is and what he represents is when he was being led away by law enforcement personnel with his trousers down to his feet, around his ankle. Did you see that one?
Yeah.
He's walking around in his baggy boxer shorts, this geezer. He's walking around his boxer shorts with his trousers pulled down to his ankles. They fell down. That's him. And I think maybe that was posed too, for all we know. So he's part of the operation in some fashion. I don't know. It's just so coincidental that he happens to be at the Boston Marathon bombing, and he's here. And he was a well-known figure, by the way, in the local political scene. He was a professional agitator masquerading as a conservative. There's one in every neighborhood. I have been to many, many meetings, and there's always guys like him. And I recognize some of these people. They're there to frustrate people, to rabble rouse. Of course, they, you know, they get the attention. They love that part. But they're there to really gum up the works, to get people disgusted.
So that's him. Earlier on, you touched on this generation of people who've been MK Ultra'd, who don't even communicate in a human way anymore. Do you think Big Pharma has played a role in changing the genetic composition, the DNA of these people, the biochemistry of them, through, you know, from birth, the things they put in them, to when they get them really prescribed and encourage them to have certain, all of the different, what they call hormone blockers and stuff like that, and then they become clients for life at a very young age?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Just this past Sunday, I had a guest on my show, Lena Poo, who went through the whole history of it. She's a longtime activist against 5G and also Big Pharma. So you have the electromagnetic contamination, and also probably V damage. I'll use the initial, I'll let you use your imagination, audience. V damage, long lasting. We're seeing the manifestation of childhood V's showing up in the Asperger's. You know, they're on the spectrum, right? And I gave a talk on the Austrian eugenicist pre-Nazi, or I guess he was a Nazi, Dr. Hans Asperger. That was a real guy. He ran a children's hospital. All that's been engineered. It's been workshopped. And it's been laid out, as you imply. It's been put out into the larger society. Yeah, they're like that. And I had them in my classes. They started showing up at a certain point, that Gen Z stare. And it's not just a affect. There's some kind of neurological problems going on there. Doesn't seem like they're registering you as a human being, right? They've already become part of the Borg or something. Not all of them, but a lot of them are, right? And this seems to become kind of a meme lately, the Gen Z stare, ladies and gentlemen. You can look it up on TubeU. There's parodies. There's little comedy sketches. But most of you will have seen this if you're out in the public.
And do you think that's cyclical, then, the worship of Hermaphroditus? Adam Smith wrote in The Wealth of the Nations that... you know, civilizations, when they conquer other countries and become wealthy, the young people, you know, effeminize and become weak, and other nations who don't have the wealth, who are hungry for it, are, you know, they're training to fight, and they end up taking from the effeminized nation. And round and round it goes throughout history. But because we've got mutually assured destruction right now, it's protecting this generation from the people at the gate.
Well, that's deliberate, because people like Governor Cox want the barbarians to take over. They want them to storm the gates. They want them to cross the borders. They want a impotent, non-reproductive population. Right, which is really the definition of homosexuality, right? You're, by definition, you're not going to reproduce. You've reached the terminus of human development. They want to see it. That's what they're being paid for. That's part of the post-human agenda. If you're looking further down the line, this is one of the stepping stones toward that goal. But we're being sidetracked by the, well, the angle of the shooter was this and that, or I saw a flash in the stairwell, or I'm an ex-special forces guy, and we don't use that caliber bullet, that type of stuff, right? Let's look at this, widen the focus and look at the civilizational view, like Parsons Adam Smith. He was a clergyman. He was a moral philosopher. We study him as an economist, but at bottom, he was a moral philosopher. He's part of the Scottish Enlightenment. He was warning civilization not to go soft with all the incoming affluence by, you know, overseas colonies and the silks and the spices and the gold that they take from the Malaysian people. You know, you become decadent. And in everything but biological, you do become a eunuch. You become decadent.
There's not enough people that have got the military fitness to replace the people in the military as the from this new generation, because the sat at computers debilitating themselves. Mm-hmm. They're not out there doing the normal things that, you know, that are necessary to have that skill set for the military, that physical fitness.
Yeah, this is why the physical fitness standards, at least in America, have been lowered across. In addition to the fact they said, well, we have to have X number or YZ of this particular demographic, you know, a person. So they had to lower the bar. And what's really one of the good trends on social media, especially YouTube, is these shows that have body cams of cops, right? Making routine arrests. In America, it's out of control. You get a better idea that you have to be a big, bad MF-er in order to just do your basic job, because someone's going to throw you, cop, Mr. Cop, with a gun, with a vest on, with a taser. He's going to pick you up and throw you on the ground and stomp on you after a routine traffic stop. So you don't want no little lady running up on people like that in the street. So the body cams show that. It's hard for two or three able-bodied men who are like former football players to subdue someone who's high or pissed off or drunk. So one thing about the surveillance society that I do encourage are the police body cams.
Well, the other thing is the prison officers, you know, we've interviewed people who've been in prison throughout the generations, and they all used to be big ex-military guys who wouldn't mess around. And now it's like what you've described. It's completely transformed. So it's like they've taken away our internal defense of having these protective warrior people. Why would what's the motive for them doing that and to push these agendas?
Well, you know what? It's not a I see that as positive. What that means is that each person is your own protector of your family, of your household. And in fact, I put in an order. I'm expecting delivery of a new collapsible baton any day now. You know what those are? Strategic batons.
Yeah.
They were outlawed in California, but there was a constitutional case saying that we have the right to arm ourselves. So I said, great, I'm getting myself a collapsible baton. And I recommend every person here who is watching, depending on where you're living, what their local laws are of your state, your country, your municipality, is to check into the collapsible baton. They go like this. They telescope and they don't retract. There's a foam cushion, and just, you know, learn some basic maneuvers, and it'll dissuade attackers. They'll move on to someone who's weak.
Which ties into the next question.
Yeah, go ahead.
The next question is, do you think that the Charlie Kirk assassination, one of the motivations behind it was to foment civil war?
I don't think so. No, It's going to take more than that to create civil war. There's a lot of rhetoric on the right and conservatives as well, in addition to the left, right? But my feeling is that the grassroots, the middle America, is not going for any of it. They're just kind of waiting for it to dissipate. The larger goal is to implement the Agenda 2030, the globalist agenda. That's what Cox wants. That's really probably what J.D. Vance wants. That's probably what Donald Trump wants. They want Agenda 2030. Well, because one of the consequences of this is...
What does that mean for the public? What does that actually mean for the public?
Well, this will be the integration of all the different institutions, banking, finance, economy, education, the agenda, food standards, sources, distribution, and policing, all under the banner of NATO and the so-called United Nations, right? New World Order, let's just call it that. NWO. This is the end game. And the other stuff are part of the three-ring clown show circus, right? That guy Cox, Governor Cox of Utah, he's a clown. He's a clown. He's a total ass clown. He's trying to pretend that he's a hero, but he's a potential vice president candidate. We have to watch him, right? Kamala Harris has already gone and passed. We've got to look at the current and future enemies. We're always fighting the last war where we should be anticipating the next one. And he's definitely one of the enemy. Remember his name, Cox, C-O-X, Spencer Cox, Utah. By the way, Utah, the state, was named after one of the many Indian tribes that they got rid of through force. Utes, the Ute tribe, Utah. That's the naming practice in America. Wipe out the local indigenous people and then name your state after them. Or your baseball team, your football team. Sick.
You got a question from Lorraine. On a recent video, Candace stated that she is a Mason within Turning Point USA. I don't think females can be Masons, can they? There's a separate thing for them. So are the assigned positions designated as Masons?
That I didn't hear this part about Candace Owens saying she was Mason. She did say that she was a convert to the Roman Church, right? The Orthodox Church, was it? Yeah, but Freemasonry, I don't know. Maybe so. I wouldn't doubt it. I did hear, though, and some of you who are listening can confirm or disconfirm it, that her husband, who she met and married in a whirlwind romance.
Here in the UK.
Yeah, he's from the UK, but he's a Rothschild. Is that true?
I didn't know that. I know that Macron was a Rothschild banker.
Yes, but I'd like people to dig into the latest rumor. I don't know if it's true or not, because I have questions myself about many of these different characters. I didn't hear the Masonic connection between her and Candace Owens, but so far as I'm concerned, She's suspect. She's sus, as the kids would say.
I like Candace because I think if she believes that Kirk was taken out because he was turning on certain vested interests that she herself is extremely outspoken about, then she's higher up that hit list than Kirk, and she's still speaking out. So she's putting her life on the line, I think.
Well, remember Blumenthal, Max Blumenthal, right? The son of Sidney Blumenthal. You could be a hangout for these organizations, whatever it is. I never take any of these characters that are out there spewing whatever it is that they're spewing, whether it's Charlie Kirk all the way down, I never take them at face value. That's just my rule of thumb. And the truth will out about any of these people. Let's forget about her for a moment. Her actions. By the way, she comes out of the Ben Shapiro fold anyway. Talk about sus. He's one of them, you know. But he's not going anywhere because he's still going to be supported and pushed on us. Same with Mark Levin, who comes from a different generation. But I'm talking about the young punks. Ben Shapiro is number one of the list of young punks, as far as I'm concerned. And he's very open about being a controlled asset.
All right.
I didn't say who. I'm just letting you use your imagination. But
well, yeah, a lot of people.
She had like a falling out with that group. It could have been over money. It probably doesn't have anything to do with ideologists. Like, hey, I need more money. You know, who knows?
But weren't they really young when they were signing up for all that stuff? And as they mature,
sure, yeah. But we've seen all these people flapping the breeze, wherever the wind's blowing, they change. Look at what's his face. He's been keeping a low profile lately. What's his name? He's also from the UK. Russell Brand. Before he was Mr. Leftist. I said, who's this ass clown? And then all of a sudden he's Mr. Conservative. Right now he's Mr. Groper. So he's kind of chilling right now. Or he's reinvented himself as a family man. And, you know, so come on, they're part of the clown show.
There goes my hopes of getting Russell on. I like Russell. Oh, I'm sorry. You got a question.
Okay.
You got a question here from Abundantly Empowered.
He wouldn't care what some yellow man says about him. He's living large. He's living the dream, man. I'm here. I only have 60. Huh?
He's copped a case. He might be going to do some hard time here in the UK.
Oh, really? Do tell. What happened? What's happening with that?
So with Russell, then, there was a Channel 4 Times, I think, collaboration where they contacted every woman he'd ever slept with in his entire life who would speak to them. And they found some of them and got some of them to make serious allegations against him. And then they put this 1-800 number up all over the country here, all over the media, if something like this has happened to you at the hands of Russell Brand, contact this number. So it was this big concerted effort to shut him up that made me think, you know, he is pissing the globalists off because he's talking about the V. He's talking about big pharma, military industrial complex, that kind of thing. You know, I didn't like him in the beginning. I thought he was a prat when he was doing those chick flicks and stuff. But when I saw him speak to Parliament here about drug addiction, that's when I started to like him. He gave a very convincing and
discussion. He's a very good actor.
However, he could have just taken the devil's offer and stuck with Katy Perry and the Illuminati in Hollywood. And when he walked away from all that, he lost a lot of biz.
Well, I think he knew that the currents were shifting and he shifted. You know, the timing was right for him to change ideologically. But however, I make a personal appeal to Mr. Russell Brand to appear on the Sean Atwood show and to state his case, because me and millions of other people want to know what's being done to you, Mr. Brand. And you need a forum to be able to tell your truth to us, and then we'll decide. So don't go by me. Please go on the show. You have my total endorsement for you to speak your truth.
So the Epstein story has been burning the political house down in America now for months, ever since Elon said Trump was in the Epstein files. It crossed the Atlantic Ocean this week when we saw Mandelson get fired by Keir Starmer because of his love letter to Epstein. And it seems to me that the vested interests are scrambling to get big stories out there to get Epstein off the front pages. So this question from Abundantly Empowered: what are your thoughts, Professor, on the Senate Republicans blocking the release of the Epstein files on the same day as Charlie Kirk's hit? Is that a coincidence?
No, there are no coincidences in politics, not at this level. No, their behavior is suspicious. Donald Trump's behavior is suspicious. He keeps contradicting himself. All of the people around him, Bondi, we know the whole story about them, and Cash Patel, and what's his name, Bongino? Yeah, they're Bongino, very suspicious. Yeah. Are you there?
Do you think the Epstein story is just going to keep running? And how is the political establishment going to let that pressure out the system?
It's going to keep running because Trump is out of office in 3 years anyway. So he's going to make it to the finish line. The real question is who is going to be his successor. So I think the opposition of Trump and of the MAGA movement is thinking ahead to who is going to be in that position. And one of their guys is Cox. They're going to put him in place, the vice president's position. Have him run with J.D. Vance, who looks like the heir apparent. See, they're looking over the horizon. We can forget about Trump. His agenda was set. He's implementing to the best of his ability what it is. But he's going to be able to make it to the finish line. But again, the point is the mega agenda going to make it past Trump?
Carl wants to know, could the professor speak to the influence on Trump and the administration that the Adelson family has?
Well, Miriam Adelson is the inheritor to the Adelson fortune because her husband died, I don't know how many years ago, I forgot his name, but he was the kingpin of Las Vegas, right? And that's a good question because Las Vegas, Nevada, USA, is a barometer to the larger economic health of the United States of America. Las Vegas, Sin City, which, by the way, is not that far from Utah. Utah is the state north of that. And Las Vegas is dying. And the U.S. economy is dying. There's been more layoffs recently than we had seen since the lockdown of 2020. You know, the lockdown I'm referring to, right? The V lockdown. It's at that level now, and that's not being reported. And I think that's another reason why the Charlie Kirk operation was implemented, to disguise the fact that the United States is in a state of economic crisis, political economic crisis right now. Las Vegas at the epicenter, Adelson. And to finish the story about Adelson, he knew what was going on because he's an insider. That's part of the implosion of the American economy that him and others, investors, people, Larry Fink, those people, are in on. So he disinvested from Las Vegas a long time ago, cashed out. And guess where he put his money? Macau. He's put his money in the Asian world, and that is not covered except on the Sean Atwood show. that's
Chinese, it represents Chinese gambling and AI interests.
Yes, with Macau being far bigger and better so far as the food, the service, the types of gambling, the odds, than Las Vegas ever would be, because it got taken over by the super mob, not by the traditional mob, but by the Wall Street people. Then it went down. Larry Fink, all the so-called private equity companies took over, and they looted Las Vegas, just like they're in the process of looting the American economy and mainstream. That's what we should be focusing on, too, as we mourn the death of Charlie Kirk.
And is that
it takes our mind away from that, huh?
Is that the point then, that Charlie Kirk was about to become a thorn in the side of those looting the American economy.
Yes, he already was in the side of it. He was pushing further into it. He was calling them out. And you know what? Hundreds of thousands, if not millions of young people, his demographic, were listening to him. And they were going to mobilize themselves politically as a unified voice against this systematic looting by the City of London and Wall Street, so-called private equity firms, BlackRock, and the other, and the rest of them as well, right? They also need to go in on, and they're kind of still blinded by this, they need to go in on the whole AI process, because this is an important point that I neglected to mention in reference to Utah. Utah is being turned over to all these giant power plants that are going into rural, pristine areas to power up AI. They're going there and scooping it up. They're going to destroy the water supply, the land, and we're all going to be working on this neo-feudal techno system that has AI in the catbird seat. And Utah is going to be the linchpin of it. And it's going to be socialist. It's going to be techno-socialist. It's going to be run by people like Cox, the University of Utah, Utah State. All the education, the K-12 education, is going to be fully aligned with the AI dream. Alex Karp, Peter Thiel, I hate to say it, Elon Musk as well. Utah is the keystone state. Watch it very carefully.
And watch uranium prices continue to go up for the scramble for nuclear power plants to finance the AI.
Right. As all those patents on anti-gravity and gravitics, right, powers, options, Tesla-derived technologies, T. Philo Ford, there's all these inventors out there that have all kinds of really important inventions that are being suppressed.
Well, the Chinese have already got the driverless taxis running around in two cities now.
Well, I don't know if we want to go in that direction, but, you know.
You got a question from Louise. Do you think J.D. Vance will be any good?
No. Very simply, no. I gave a talk on him a couple of years ago because he wrote the book, you know, Hillbilly Elegy. And I said this is PR garbage. This is reminds me of Barack Hussein Obama's books, where he was getting geared up for president. It was written by committee from Wall Streeters, which he comes from Wall Street. So no, we got to watch him like a hawk too.
Right, Professor. Is there anything you would like to say in conclusion? Then we've answered all of the questions pertinent to the subject.
Well, it's been a joy to share these insights with you, and really, the end is not in sight yet, right? The investigation is really beginning. But I think we have shared here over the last close to an hour and a half or 2 hours and a half some of the points that we have to look at as investigators, thinking people. Look at this guy Cox. Look at the takeover, the socialist takeover of Utah, which people mistakenly think is solidly conservative. And be careful for future operations. This is the season of assassination.
Thank you. Do you have anyone else you think might be next?
I'm not going to make any predictions. Yeah.
All right.
I think it's going to be from the world, not of politics, though. It's going to be from the world of the popular culture.
On that dark note, we shall let you get on with your day. Thank you, my friend. I shall close the show and let you go. Cheerio.
Thank you, sir. See you soon.
Take care. Bye-bye. All right, let's help Professor get over Come on, climb to 100,000 subs. There's his channel link. I'll put it in the live chat right now. If you're watching on replay, the link, his Facebook, his bibliography are all in the description box. Lauren today did 2 hours with Murray, the victim's advocate in Australia, whose property has a property near one of Virginia's properties, the Epstein survivor. If you missed that one, check that one out in the back catalogue. And I think we've got Zachary King coming back on, but next week now with Lauren as well. We had Lionel on Charlie Kirk last night. If you missed that one, I was in stitches laughing. So you might want to check that one out as well. And Ron's back tomorrow with the Royal Mess. Thank you for tuning in, folks. Hope to see some of you in the next streams. Cheerio.